This episode brought to you by Team Stripes Academy. Learn from some of the top officials in the world. Start today at TeamStripesAcademy.com.
You're listening to the Team Stripes Podcast, the podcast for hockey referees. Each show, we discuss the world of officiating and find out that not everything is in black and white.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Team Stripes Podcast. I'm your host, Ross Grimaldi, joined by my co-host, as always, Nat Swanson. What's up, dude?
Hey, buddy. How's it going?
Living the dream, my friend.
Oh, absolutely, man.
It is the end of March. Season is winding down for most, getting to be crunch time for others.
Yeah, I'd say
life is good.
Life is good, man. The snow is melting for those of us in the North Country. The sun is shining. The birds are flying. The flowers are blooming. You know, everyone's chomping at the bit to see kind of what's going on, whether it's working, you know, late in the playoffs or it's time to break out the golf clubs and start hitting up the driving range, man. I think it's a good time of year. It's a good time of year.
Yes. Yes, it is. I know ACHA and AAU both concluded their nationals 2 weeks ago or a week and a half ago. USA Hockey High School Nationals was this past weekend. Yep. Moving forward are the rest of the USA Hockey Nationals. And then we have the Southern Pro League, the Fed, the Coast, the American League, the NHL, obviously all working towards playoffs. I know we're starting to see our almost daily updates of who's what in the standings and what's going on. Yep. I thought I was done for the year, but I got another assignment. I got a game in Orlando coming up.
Nice.
And it's just, you know, plugging away. I got to go to AAU Nationals, was there for 5 days. Worked the D1 championship game with South Carolina and Buffalo, who were the 5 and 6 seed going into the tournament, or 6 and 7.
Oh, wow. Dude, so, and that, man, that's what I love about single elimination tournaments, right? Is that the number one seed, like, they still have to be good, right? Yep. They've got to be good every game.
So AAU, I think, does it right compared to ACHA. They do round robin play.
Okay. Okay.
So they had four pools of four. Each pool winner got to the semis, and then we went to the finals, obviously. So South Carolina won that. They were the first representative from our league down here, College Hockey South, to win. And then down in Division II, the University of Florida won D2, and University of Miami won D3. So we swept the men's side.
Nice.
And I say we because I'm on the board as director of player safety for CHS, so have a vested interest in the league. And honestly, it was awesome to see how our teams did. We almost in D2 had a all CHS semifinal round.
Oh, wow.
But one of the teams was not ours.
Okay.
So it almost ended up happening where all four teams in the semis were from College Hockey South. Nice. So yeah, they swept on the men's side, the women's side. University of Tampa lost in the final. No big deal there. Those women played hard. I'll get the rundown of the ACHA champs here in a minute. I just know the AAU side because I'm a lot more connected to that.
Yeah. Yeah, no, dude, it was so it's cool. I got to work. I got to work a Michigan State High School Association quarterfinal. Byron Center playing Father Gabriel Richard. Dude, Byron Center was just so good. It's cool, right? So it's really cool to put high school players. They played it at Munn, which is at Michigan State up in Lansing.
Okay.
And it's just really cool to put when you put high school players into a rink that like magic has happened, that has history, that kind of stuff that means something. It was a really good game. Byron Center was just unstoppable, and it's something that unfortunately in Michigan, everything with hockey, everything is still aligned like it is with basketball and baseball and football, right? So it's all about the your enrollment, right? Numbers, right? But you and I both know that there could be a private school out there that's got 250 you know, 250 kids total for a high school. That's a hockey powerhouse, right? And and I guess that's kind of something that I was really hoping. I'm hoping, you know, this is a pipe dream, but I'm really hoping that maybe the MHSAA one day looks at all the divisions because and kind of realigns things. And that's what makes the Trenton tournament, which happens before playoffs in Michigan, like so cool, is that you get, they don't care about divisions. It's who are the power ranking powerhouse teams.
Gotcha.
And you just, you put them together.
Makes sense.
And, right. You know, unfortunately, and like we were talking to the Father Gabriel Richard coach, it's one of those, you know, one of the guys said like, hey, did you have your Herb Brooks speech ready to go? Cause you know, like unfortunately this is, it's the Americans playing the Russians, you know?
Oh, in some of those games,
some of those games. Right. So it's like, hey, you need, you know, unfortunately.
Yeah. It'd be nice if they did it by talent level. Right. Instead of, school size.
Yeah.
I feel like that would probably be the smarter thing to do.
I would agree. You know, I would agree.
Do it in football too. Like down here in Florida, it's based on how many students go to your school, what division you're in, 1A, 2A, 6A, that kind of crap.
Yeah.
It is what it is. I mean, I get it. You know, you want to do it that way based on how many, you know, players a school can pull from and all that. But it's a little different though. It needs to be straight up, you know, division one, division two, division three kind of set up.
Yeah. Well, and that's because, you know, kids grow up playing football. They grow up playing baseball or soccer, but you know, hockey, unfortunately, I saw a really good, YouTube video that talked about like, is hockey for everybody? I'll think of the guy's name in a minute, but it was really good. And it essentially talks about like, hey, people may have the desire, but they may not have the money. They may not have the funding or they may not have the ability, right? Like,
that comes down to that, you know, hockey is for everybody statement, you know, that some of the leagues put out. It's just like, yeah, it is. We want to be welcoming of everybody regardless, but there are financial barriers. So.
Right. You know, when all it costs you to play soccer is a pair of shoes or basketball is a pair of shoes.
Yeah.
You know, a glove and a bat for baseball. You know, and suddenly, you know, none of those guys have to rent the field for $150 to $200 an hour, or that's cheap now.
Most
right?
places are $400 to $600 an hour from what I understand. So it goes. And I'm glad you got to work that.
Dude, it was fun, man. It was great. Got to work it from a team. I will say that they did it right and they brought together a crew from the same conference. So it's guys who like to work with each other. So that was kind of fun.
Perfect.
You know,
yep. And we saw, let's see what else happened. Oh, speaking of high school hockey, the Minnesota one was pretty epic as always.
Dude. Yes. I mean, just I love watching.
Fill in the barn, the hockey hair, dude, the whole thing about it, right? Up in Minnesota.
I love it, man. I can't get over like how awesome that is. I mean, it's just, they get so many fans, everyone's all into it. For a month, it's just high school hockey. They're selling out, you know, they're selling 10,000 tickets.
No, they're selling more than that. They put 20,000 in the XL Energy Center, right?
Finals.
It's insane.
You know, they're breaking the glass. Like the fans are breaking the glass.
Yep. That was wild. So then you have that, and then the unfortunate incident up in Mass that got a lot of play on social media of the green light being on
when
the team scored. So there's a lot of eyes on, and you know that stuff happens, right? Especially when we don't have replay. Just got to do our best, and it is what it is. It was discussed on our Facebook group, so we won't really go into that, but.
Yeah,
it's just kind of all over the board. Everyone's season's ending. Teams are in playoffs, national championships, and all that.
It's cool.
And it's also, you know, time to start thinking of what are my plans for the off season.
Right.
You know,
and that's something that, you know, there's a lot of camps out there. I know the Knowledge just had their first exposure camp for the season. And, you know, and I know that I'm pretty sure the if anybody's out there looking to go to a futures camp or anything else like that, I'm pretty sure that that application deadline is coming up pretty quickly.
If it hasn't passed already.
If it hasn't passed already, right? So that's one of those, like, you know, I would love to, you know, for a plan for future is you and I need to put together a, like, hey, you got into a camp. What should you expect now, right?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, like, A, show up.
Best advice, A, show up in shape.
Dude, show up in shape. And then, you know, every time you're skating, make, you know, when you go to stop, make sure that the snow goes at least 4 feet, right? Just,
Yeah, you know, control stops, T-starts, T-stops, all that kind of control turns. Kind of stuff.
You know,
like all the things that are on the checklist that they look for, right?
Yeah. Know that, you know, here's one that was really interesting. I had a question on, someone asked me, like, do you think I should look up the rule book for, like, the junior rule book? It's like, well, if you're going to an exposure camp for junior hockey.
Yeah, you should probably look into that.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, yes, you know, be familiar. So
for sure.
But yeah, that's coming up. And then,
I know what my plans are for the summer.
Well, you're on the old man plan, right?
Yeah, so I'm on the old man plan. I gotta lose some weight, get back in shape, get the 80 car back in peak running condition for next season.
You know, I feel like if Mike Tyson can do it, we can do it. So,
have you seen his training videos?
Dude, it is insane.
I'm calling it right now. Jake Paul's not lasting around.
Dude, I mean.
So somebody told me, or I read, I think it was someone told me that I know. We were talking about it and he goes, oh, you know what it's like to get hit by Mike Tyson? Like, no. Because imagine holding up a phone book to your face, if anyone knows of a phone book anymore. So like you put the phone book flush up to your face and let somebody swing a baseball bat at you.
Jesus.
And the phone book acts as, like, you know, that's the glove, right?
Yeah.
So like this guy's punching force is unreal. And like watching those videos, man.
No way.
I don't care who you are.
Dude, that's Iron Mike, man. Dude, I get it. He's 57 years old. I still wouldn't. I mean, I'm pretty sure he could knock anybody out with one punch. Now,
that Rempe kid from the Rangers, I think he might stand a chance.
He might stand. He's also a monster. He's got a huge reach. Dude, I loved, I can't remember what game it was, but I love, he had already had a black eye from the previous game and someone called him out to fight. I loved the fact that he looked over at his coach first. He was like, can I fight? And then he was like, and his coach gave him the nod. He's like, all right, cool. Let's do this.
Yep.
It's
fun seeing, some of the violence in hockey again, like the fights and all that. And, you know, as long as we're doing it clean, right. There have been some crazy things happening on the ice. I know a player in one of the pro leagues just got a 3-gamer for cross-checking a guy in the head. Like, what are you thinking there? But that's hockey, right? It's a time of year where, you know, everyone's getting ramped up. My game, St. Patrick's Day, we were going north-south. It felt like a freaking playoff game.
Yeah.
Because everyone's just getting ready to get into the next gear.
Dude, so it's crazy you talk about, like, you know, the rough stuff coming back and all. And so I got to hang out at a K-Wings game with an old friend of both yours and mine from the old days, sitting up in the in kind of the press box. And we were sitting there and we're wondering why. There's a dude in Kalamazoo. His name is Chaz Redkop. And he's always fighting. And he wouldn't, right? Guys were going after him. I didn't realize that the ECHL has if you get into, it's 10 fights.
Yeah, they have a fight limit.
Yeah. So he was up on his fight limit. So it went from, like, he was always normally looking to go to, like, he didn't want to go at all.
Yeah, because it's after that 10, there's like a progressive suspension thing.
Yeah, it's
that goes along with it.
Yeah, it's like an additional game, right? And at this point in the season, when everyone's looking for, you know, to make the playoffs, you don't want to sit the next game out because you were into a fight, right? Like, because that could mean you suddenly find yourself a healthy scratch for the rest of the season. I wouldn't want that.
Yeah, exactly. Or in the case of a game I did a couple weeks ago where player did something stupid, we send him off and the coach is like, I'm cutting that guy. Like, okay, cool.
Yeah.
And then sure enough, we see in the transaction wire, oh wow, he actually did cut him for doing something stupid.
Right. Yeah. You know, that's, which is also nice. I mean, it's nice to see sometimes when you're like, oh wow. Like, you know, just it, but it just goes to show that, our calls have actions, you know, or have consequences, right?
Like, yeah, absolutely. Especially when a player does something as stupid as costing his team a power play when they needed one.
Of course. Of course. But,
anywho, I think we need to introduce our guest for today.
Yeah, man, dude, I'm excited about Sean. He's a great guy.
Yeah. So Sean McFarlane is a ODP grad, worked through, went to regional camp, then on to the USA or the NAHL, the USHL, pro hockey, you know, the Coast, the American League. And then got the opportunity through skating IHF stuff with USA Hockey to end up going over to Europe and work in the DEL. So we're going to go over to that interview right now with Sean McFarlane. Hello, everybody, and welcome to this episode of the Team Stripes podcast. I already fucked up.
Broadcast.
All right. 3, 2, 1. Hey, everybody, joining us on this episode of the Team Stripes podcast is... Hang on.
Stop. Turn your mic down a little bit. You're clipping.
Oh, am I clipping?
Okay. Yeah. Sorry. This is the
check annoying one, part. Two. How's that?
Better. A little less.
Better. A little more.
There you go.
A little more. Okay.
Yeah,
right there.
Keep your voice like that.
Okay.
You're good.
Sounds good. Hey, everybody, joining us on this episode of the Team Stripes podcast is Sean McFarlane, and he joins us today from Germany. Sean, how are you doing today?
Doing really well. Thanks, guys.
Awesome. So, obviously, I just said you're sitting over in Germany. So, where are you right now?
So, I just got to Frankfurt just about an hour ago. So, I was in the north of Germany last night working game 3 of our quarterfinals in Wolfsburg, and tomorrow I'm in Mannheim, so it's kind of our closest host hotel here in Frankfurt, like 50 minutes away.
Cool, man. Let's get into it. So we'll ask you the same thing we ask everybody. How did you start officiating? Where did your hockey journey start? And how did that get into officiating and kind of, you know, where are you from? All that kind of stuff.
Yeah, so I'm from Spokane, Washington. And my parents got me on skates when I was about 18 months. So hockey's been something, you know, a part of my life ever since I can remember, and obviously grew up playing hockey, and I was a goalie. Started officiating when I was 12, when, you know, my dad was just at the rink, and you know, obviously knew some of the local youth guys, and one of them was like, hey, like, you should bring Sean out. And so yeah, started when I was 12 and stopped playing at 17, and went to my first USA Hockey camp after my senior year of high school in Rochester, New York, and that's kind of when the ODP started for me.
Oh, very cool. So you started, like everyone says, like the best referees are always goalies and goons, right?
Yeah.
I wasn't a goalie. Yeah, that's what right? I added in there.
Nice. So did you go to, like, was that Eastern Regional Camp? Is that what you went to? So did you start where you went to the Eastern Camp from the west side of the country?
Yeah. So me and one other guy from Spokane, my best buddy, went, and I want to say there was another guy from Washington State. I don't really know the reason why we went to the Eastern, but it actually worked out well for me because Western would have been during my high school graduation, and I for sure would have skipped the graduation to go to Western, and I'm sure my parents wouldn't have been.
Priorities, right?
Yeah. So, yeah, it worked out, and yeah, our regional camp, I honestly think, was probably the most talented camp USA Hockey's ever had. We had guys like Ryan Daisy, Charlie O'Connor, Pat Turcotte, some like really impressive officials there. So it was kind of my first like experience of like, wow, this is, you know, I grew up in Spokane and, you know,
yeah,
I'm the best, you know, nobody competes with me. And I come here, I'm like, okay, yeah, like, I'm not very good.
Yeah, you suddenly get experience.
You get humbled quick, right? You go from big fish in a small pond, and then especially showing up to a a regional camp with Ryan Daizee and Charlie O'Connor.
Oh,
like,
man.
Exactly. Two of the best.
And I remember it was the opening, like, you know, spiel from USA Hockey of, like, you know, somebody from this group is going to get hired into the NHL. One guy is going to get hired into the NHL. And then you fast forward like 8 years later and it's Ryan Daizee. And I'm like, well, shit, they only said one guy. So they were right.
Yeah.
That they were.
Yeah. So, so program stuff. So, so did you move into an apartment? Like, what was your, when you were doing the program, what was that kind of journey for you?
Yep. So it was actually, you know, pretty wild at regional camp where, you know, I'm 5'9". So I knew I was going to be a referee, not a linesman. And I was one of the last guys to referee at regional camp. And I wasn't good. In the one period we got to work, I wouldn't say I was horrible, but I knew I was overthinking things. And one of the instructors told me, like, hey, you should probably think about being a linesman, not a referee. Like, we weren't really impressed. And so I was at, like, low there, like, okay, my career's already over. And that night is actually when Chris Allman invited me to ODP camp in St. Paul that summer. So went there,
very cool.
Got hired part-time. I was in Spokane my first year, and I'd fly maybe twice a week, like up to Alaska, doing a lot of North American League. And then we had like the Great Lakes Collegiate. Great Lakes Junior Hockey League.
Yeah, the GTHL. GTHL.
Back then it was Junior C, and I would fly out to like Michigan, stay with Mono and referee that. And so 1 year part-time, and then after that I moved out to Minnesota for my first year full-time. And
nice.
I want to say I was, you know, in the ODP full-time maybe 6 or 7 years. So
nice. What year was that you kind of moved out?
So let's see, I graduated in 2010, so 11, 12 would have been my part-time season. 12, 13 would have been my first full-time season.
Nice. Cool. And then when
was that just straight in the NHL, NA3, or you get USHL at that point? Or?
Yeah. So actually I got really spoiled my first year full-time. So the league had hired Rick Looker for the North American League job. And there was kind of like, I don't know, I was caught in a whirlwind between Scott Brand at the time and Rick Looker. And from what I heard, one guy wanted me and the other one didn't want to share. And so Scott Brand kind of was like, all right, well, if you don't want to share, then I'm going to take him. And so I went to USHL camp at 19 and I didn't even know what I was showing up to do. Like if I was a referee or linesman, because my part-time year, I did one game as a linesman in the USHL. And it was Chris Woodworth was like, what do you mean you're a referee? So I was like, oh, okay, I'm a referee. Like, and so I ended up working, I want to say like 34 games as a referee my first year full-time in the USHL.
Oh, nice.
And the North American League. And I didn't make it to the Robertson Cup that year. So again, like confidence was really high. Rick Looker got let go. Chris Allman came in, and that's kind of when I got brought back to reality. And I think that next year I only worked 3 USHL games as a referee, and the rest was North American League. And one of the 3 USHL games was in Youngstown, and it's by far the worst officiated game I've ever had in my life. So, you know, at the time my confidence was low, and I'm glad that I got brought back down and had to be successful in the NA3 and the NA before making the full jump. So
very cool. Very cool. So, and then when did your pro hockey career start?
Pro hockey career would have started, it would have been after my second finals in the USHL, would have been 2017, 2018 is when I got hired by the ECHL and moved to Kansas City.
Okay. And what's that, you know, like what that, you know, you're working the ECHL, you know, and then you said, you know, you jump up to the American League a bit. And in all this time, like you got your IIHF certification, how did that come about? Did you go to through the USA? Did you go through the elite camp?
Elite camp. And that was kind of, I was eyeing elite camp for a couple years. So when would I have gone? Maybe when I was 27, 26. And I was eyeing it for a couple of years. And my Pacific District RIC kind of was like, hey, you should apply for this. And, you know, I talked to guys and find out who was applying. And I was like, I'm not going to apply unless I know I can be one of the top guys there. So I kind of held off and then applied for elite experience because it's difficult to get into because what, only four referees, four linesmen get in. And, yeah. And that's kind of your first test at IIHF. And from there, if you do well, then you get a license from USA Hockey. So that's where I got my start.
Cool.
Well, then obviously you get that license. Where did you start? Like, what was your first international experience? Like, where'd you go? What level was it?
Yeah, it was actually one of my favorite cities I've ever been to in Europe. It was a U21B, so maybe the third or fourth division of U20. It was in Bled, Slovenia, right before Christmas. And Bled's an incredible place. It's small, maybe only 8,000, but it's centered around a lake with a castle on the mountains at the top of the lake. So it was beautiful. It was my first experience. And I got lucky. One of the officiating coaches was Matt Leaf at that tournament. And so actually two of my closest German buddies that I still work with were at that tournament. So, and that's kind of where I started thinking about, hey, I want to work in Europe. Cause we'd sit in their hotel room and watch DEL mm-hmm. games. I'd be like, okay, well, like that atmosphere is pretty wild. Like, and that's what started making me think about, I want to come over here.
Nice. So going back to like when you first started into pro hockey, making that shift from the USHL into the coast, thinking about that, like for a referee, what was the hardest thing for you as far as that transition goes?
I think the hardest part was like the mental strength and being consistent and, you know, putting together a good hockey game every single night, because, you know, now you get to pro hockey where livelihoods depend on it between coaches, players and whatnot. And you can't take nights off. And in ECHL, that's difficult because the travel's mm-hmm. tough, the games are tough. So for me, the biggest challenge was just being mentally focused at 100% every single night.
So then you go, like, you know, you're working the ECHL, you've worked in the American League as well. What's the difference now going over to Europe with the players? I know there are a lot of American and Canadian yeah. players that play over in Europe, but obviously the officiating style is different over there. The play is different. Obviously you guys are playing on what, Olympic size sheets?
Yeah. Yeah. We have one rink that's NHL size, but the rest are Olympic.
Okay. So you got that going. It's a completely different game. You're playing IIHF rules. It's just a completely different environment than anything like any of us have ever experienced over here. What was the transition now going over there like from coming from, you know, the coast and then the American League?
Yeah, I think, you know, the biggest transition is, you know, the DEL over here is, you know, the top hockey league. So the scrutiny we get on the officiating side in the media and social media, mm-hmm. whatever it is what the NHL guys get, right? Because that's the top of the top in North America. And so now in Germany, the DEL is that. And yeah, so any mistake, especially big mistakes, it's in the paper. It's, yeah. it's all over. Like, you know, I've gotten numerous like requests on Instagram from mm-hmm. newspapers over here asking for like a statement on a call or something like that. So, yeah. Yeah.
That's crazy yeah. that they would even reach out. Cause I know like here, obviously like with the NHL, everything has to go through the OA.
Yeah.
And they're reaching out to you individually. Like,
yeah.
That's
yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah. It's just, you know, just reporters from their newspaper mm-hmm. that will find me on Instagram. Cause I, you know, I deactivate Facebook during the season, but I keep my Instagram, private, but but it's out there. And, you know, my first season over here, it was just a headshot of me. So it was pretty easy to type in my name on Instagram and
yeah,
that looks like a referee. So changed the picture up to a picture of me and my fiance. And so it's a little harder for them to find me, but
still. Yep.
Damn. Like I keep running, but they keep finding me.
Yeah.
Dude. So what's that process? How did that work for you? Like, how did you, you know, for anybody else out there who's listening, I know you probably get a lot of folks who get in touch with you because you're in your third season out there, you said. So how does that process go, right? So anybody who maybe is grinding away in the ECHL, American League, you know, what, how did you introduce that? Other than, hey, you're working some IIHF tournaments, but what's the process from there?
To get to Europe?
Yeah, to get to Europe.
Yeah, so as an American, you're going to need your IIHF license most likely, unless you have some kind of citizenship in Europe where, you know, the leagues over here don't have to, you know, get a visa. But at the same time, these leagues like to see that you've proved yourself as a referee and kind of as a colleague at these IIHF tournaments. And so for me, yeah, where it started was Slovenia, where I started to get, you know, my mind turning like, hey, I want to get over there. And then it was two tournaments later at my World Juniors, right before COVID, I had my exit interview and IIHF kind of asked me like, hey, what are your goals, you know, in officiating? And so I, you know, just said, yeah, I want to go to a World Championship men's. I want to work in Olympics and I want to work full time in Europe. And so the next day, one of my supervisors was from the Swiss league. And he came up to me and asked me, he's like, hey, are you serious about that? And I was like, yeah, absolutely. Like, I'll come over, you know, anytime. Mm-hmm. And so that then COVID happened and we stayed in touch. Next season went on with no fans. So that, you know, they said they couldn't really get me. And then it was the following year. I had signed a contract actually and was about 3 weeks away from moving to Switzerland to work there when the Swiss government denied my visa.
Which, man.
I guess from what I hear is pretty common for American citizens to get turned away by the Swiss government. So yeah, I was all set. I had already told the American League, the ECHL, like, hey, I'm going to Europe. Like, thanks for everything. And so then it fell through and now I'm kind of panicking, like, all right, like, you know, yeah. I had my mindset on being in Europe. And so I was actually at ODP Prospects Camp instructing. So I was with Scott Zelkin and I was devastated. And so it kind of talked to Scott.
Oh, absolutely, right?
Yeah, I mean, there hasn't been many times in my career where I cried over something. And yeah, I cried because, you know, European leagues are starting now in a month and I've told the ECHL, the American League, like, you know, I'm sorry, but I'm gone. And so Scott started telling me, you know, reach out to here. So one of the places he asked me to reach out to was Hungary.
Mm-hmm.
And so I reached out to them to see what they could offer me. And I also reached out to Germany because that was when we had Andrew Wilkes, Steven Renault, Andrew Bruggemann, and Jake Rakuki going to Germany. And they had already all been contacted. And so I called the German boss and I said, hey, like, you know, I'm interested in coming over this next year. Is there room for me? And he was like, well, I heard you were going to Switzerland or I would have reached out. And I was like, you know, up until 5 minutes ago, I was supposed to be. And he said, well, okay, let me talk to my boss. He only approved of 4 imports. Let me see if I could get a 5th. And he did. And so that's when I ended up coming over. It was supposed to be on like a part-time basis, like 3 1-month trips. And it ended up me being here for like 6.5 months. So I think I almost worked 70 games that first year. So.
Oh, wow.
Yep. So, yeah, IIHF would definitely, you know, be a big, big help for any Americans or Canadians wanting to get to Europe and kind of, you know, building contacts that way, especially through the supervisors and letting them know like, hey, I am interested in working overseas. If you have any jobs open, and that's when they will reach out. Because yeah, some of these leagues are open to hiring imports where some others aren't. So
yeah.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things, like on our side of things with for the American and Canadian officials, like we only know, you know, what we have over here. Like guys are going to go work, you know, major junior up in Canada, try to get to the American League, try to get to the NHL, the American guys, right? We're going to go work, you know, our program, our ECHL American League, also try to get to the NHL. And something that's not really on our radar is that European route.
Yeah.
And seeing guys like yourself and Rakuki and Renault and Bruggs get to go over there and do that and show what, you know, the talent of North American officials looks like over there. It certainly seems like it's going to eventually, like even more doors are going to be open, maybe not even necessarily to guys that have that IHF license, but if they're, you know, maybe an accomplished ECHL American League official, if, you know, the path to the NHL doesn't go, maybe, you know, the path over to Europe would be something that could be open for more guys to go over.
Yeah, absolutely. And this year we have Reed Anderson, who was in the NHL. He came over kind of like what my plan was for my first season, a month at a time. So he's been over here. He's over here for playoffs right now. So yeah, it's definitely a door that is getting open. I hope, you know, somebody listening is like, okay, I'm interested in that, and that's something worth working towards. So, because it's an incredible experience. It's fun. I love it over here. I definitely miss home, but it's a good time here.
Yeah. What's the living situation like? Right. So how do you, you know, are you just like, all right, good luck getting an apartment, or what, you know, what do the leagues do? You're in a hotel room right now because you're traveling, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No. So my first year that I, you know, was I'll say part time. It was just constantly hotels. Like I didn't have an apartment. I didn't even have a car. It was either I was getting rides from other guys or taking the train. And so you're lugging around all your equipment and luggage. So that was you know, kind of a pain in the ass. But when I signed my full time contract, the league told me like, hey, you're on your own now for living. In my contract, I do have a car, so the league provides me with a car, which is nice. But so I get to pick wherever I live. I, you know, was living in Nuremberg last year, which is in the south in Bavaria, which is my city in Germany. Jealous. Yeah, it's it's an incredible spot, and yeah, we lived maybe a kilometer away from the old town, so it was an easy walk.
Nice.
And then this year I'm in the west. It's a city called Essen. It's close to Düsseldorf. It's definitely not as nice as Nuremberg, but it's actually one of the linesman's apartments that he rents out to me. So like it's nice. I don't have a contract. I didn't have to do a down payment or anything.
Yeah.
So it's good.
That's awesome.
My own place to live. And the league provides me a car and pays for all my gas. So
perfect.
Nice. Very cool.
How many teams are in the DEL? I should have done my research, but yeah, I don't know 15. Much.
15. Yeah. And okay. So we have 14. Last year we had 15. We had a team get relegated. So we do promotion relegation with the DEL too. It's a weird setup right now because for a team to get promoted from the DEL2, they have to have like a certain size arena, like youth program, and obviously funds. And right now, there's only four teams in the DEL2 that get promoted, and two are left in the playoffs. So the team that got last in our regular season this year is waiting until the DEL2 playoffs get done with to see if they are into the DEL2. So
gotcha. Now do you go up and down at all? Do you just strictly work the one?
Yep. The just over here I just work the DEL and Champions Hockey League.
Okay. Oh, so you work the Champions League too?
Yep.
Let's talk a little bit about that, because that's I know they were the ones, I think it was this summer, that started they started with the rule change of the shorthanded team scores. Their guy comes out of the box and did a couple other things. What What is that comprised of? It's not just teams in Germany, obviously, right? It's teams all over Europe.
Yep, teams all over Europe. So Germany gets three. Sweden, Finland get three. Switzerland gets three. Czechs get three. Slovaks maybe two. And then the smaller countries get one. So for us, like, we already know the German teams that are in Champions League for next year. It's the three top teams at the regular season. So
Yeah. And now that's like a league that goes on while the regular season's also going on for the DEL, right? So like they have their DEL games and they have their Champions League games.
Correct. So let's see, the finals for the Champions League was, I don't know, maybe a month ago. So this year, actually, my first game of the season was a Champions League game in Munich. So they start right before the domestic season starts.
Okay. And then do you get to travel outside of Germany for those?
So
do you just work the games in Germany?
Just for playoffs. So,
Okay.
So they use kind of their domestic officials. So Swedish guys will always work the Sweden home games.
Okay.
That makes playoffs sense. And then they don't have any other country working. So like when playoffs come around, I wouldn't work any of the German teams in playoffs.
Okay. That makes sense. So kind of much like some of the other IHF stuff used to be, you don't work your home country. So
Or even like the NCAA D1 guys, where they used to never work their own conference, right? Like, that's kind of changing, but
still the case, right? In playoffs.
I'm pretty sure it's still the case. Like once you get to the big tournament, you're not working your own conference. Hopefully they'll get away from that at some point, but who knows? But anyway,
Because then you got to root for teams to lose. Lose, right?
So you got to root for your own teams to get knocked out, so you can. Much the same, right?
Yeah.
Now, what? So being over there working with the other, you know, the German officials, have you learned anything about like their development path and like kind of what goes on over there and how they make it from grassroots up to, you know, the top league?
Yeah. So coming over here definitely spoils me with, you know, USA Hockey's ODP and our staff. Like, I think there's a reason why USA Hockey has some of the best officials in the world, and it's a lot of it is the development. And unfortunately, right now in Germany, there's not a lot of guys that are getting developed, and they kind of have a system called the trainee program.
I don't
know too much about it, but let's say, I don't know, maybe they have only eight guys in it.
Okay.
And I do know it consists of like monthly meetings where they will travel to somewhere in Germany and they'll just sit for a week and watch clips, talk about stuff. But I want to say maybe in the DEL this year, the trainee program only maybe three guys worked maximum three games.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's definitely not as good as, you know, Hockey Canada or USA Hockey
Development. Yeah. Well, I'm sure they're, you know, trying to follow the model that USA and Canada have developed and, you know, bringing guys like you in to work with their top guys and maybe some of the guys that go up and down. Are there officials that go up and down between the Dell 2 and the Dell?
Actually, one of the German referees that was at World Juniors goes back and forth between the DEL and the DEL 2. And he's gonna be really good. So
cool.
There are some good young guys coming up here.
That's awesome. It's always nice to see the growth, whether it's, you know, here or there.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so with the Dell as well, like the coaching that you guys get over there, I know nothing about it. Like, is it much the same here, or you guys have officiating coaches and you guys go over clips and this and that and kind of talk about that a little bit.
So we actually, I'd say the majority of my games, we have an officiating coach at, and we actually have it this system where at the league's office, they have, I guess you could call them clippers. They just watch, like, there'll be somebody assigned to my game and they'll go on and they'll clip everything. even if they think it's a missed penalty. So they'll clip that. They'll clip big hits. They'll clip goals, offsides, icings, penalties. So like, you know, we had four games last night, so I could get to my hotel and virtually see everything that happened in the other games.
Okay.
Go right on there. So, yeah, I mean, everything is seen through the camera. So any mistake you make, you know, a soft penalty or not, you know, the whole league's seen.
And I've heard from other officials that have gone over there, like the guys like almost overcomplicate things. Like they'll pull out their iPads between the periods and start looking at that stuff like before they even go back out.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is much different from our culture over here.
Yeah.
Like we're not doing that kind of stuff.
Yeah, exactly. You know, in the ECHL and the American League, we're never looking at any film in between periods. But yeah, over here, if you were to just be a fly on the wall in the locker room, you'd probably see two computers out going through things. And, you know, one thing I was kind of surprised about over here is if there's a close play at the blue line or icing, you'll actually see linesmen pull out their pad and their pen and write down the time so they can go back and look at it. Yeah. So
interesting.
I have kind of gotten into the habit where I will go look at some things now while I'm in Germany, you know, intermission, but yeah, it can be helpful, but at the same time, I wouldn't if I, you know, was in charge of a league, I wouldn't want my guys doing that.
Yeah. It's just an interesting thing. Cause like, I know, when Jamie went over, Coho, like he was kind of telling me about that stuff and the guys like they know what a penalty looks like, but not necessarily like why, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah, and the hard part over here too is the crowds are extremely hostile, and they're soccer crowds. Like if you were able to tune into a DEL game tomorrow, like you'd be amazed at even just hearing it through, you know, the TV at how loud they are, and the home crowd, they think there should be a penalty. They whistle like Germans, like
I can't
do that. Every single one of them. So, yeah, if you're in Cologne and it's 19,000 fans and you're getting those whistles going, it can be pretty intimidating.
Oh, yeah. I can only imagine when you got, you know, because obviously here we get the ref you suck chant, right?
Yeah.
Over there you're getting whistled at.
And at times it's like, wow, like that. Yeah, that's intimidating.
What's the fan IQ like over there compared to like here?
Yeah, I joke with my fiance quite a bit. She works for USA Hockey, so she has pretty good hockey knowledge, and we joke quite often about how it's very low.
Okay, fair.
Yeah, very low.
I mean, I've been lucky enough to get to go to a game. Like I've gone to like an NHL game in Boston. I've gone to an NHL game in Montreal. Like you go to a game in Montreal and you go to a game in Tampa, and there's a very big difference in the hockey IQ of the fans, right? So, you know, they'll let you know when you're doing something right or doing something wrong, whatever. And I can obviously in Germany and being that soccer type atmosphere, God, that's got to be so fun.
Yeah, it's crazy. And you know, they have drums, they have air horns, they have flags. Like every arena has a section called like the ultras, which is the hooligans, you could call them. It's wild. And each arena has an away section.
Okay.
And it's just lined with police officers on both sides.
Oh my God. For the away team crowd to come in.
And we have, it's called derbies. So just a rivalry. So there's quite a bit of derbies in this league just because it's not a very big country. So teams are close. And I remember it was maybe 2 weeks left of the regular season, Dusseldorf, Iserlohn, and it's only maybe 30 minutes apart from each other. Small arena, and game was over and we were in our locker room and we could hear like something going on out in the crowd. And so we go,
oh my goodness.
And it was the two fan clubs trying to get at each other, and police officers had their like batons just like swinging back, and it was entertaining.
That's unreal.
So sometimes I'll leave an arena and be like, okay, like I hope my tires flash. But luckily, it's not my car; it's the league's car, so not my problem.
Even still, though, that's just pretty wild of an environment to be in.
Yeah, but I mean, that's like if you look at, right, so you said you've got 15 teams, right? So there's 15 teams in the size of essentially like put Michigan, Ohio, and Indiana together, and that's Germany, right? So now you've got 15 teams. So essentially every major city is going to have a team and then some smaller ones as well, right? So, I mean, of course you're going to have rivalries because who wouldn't drive 3 hours to go?
Yeah, absolutely. You know? And, you know, we'll have games on Wednesday and the away sections will be packed. So over here in Germany, it's easy to hop on a train and you know, drink a few pops and not have to worry about driving, and they could get a drink back home after the game. So
that's awesome. How much is language an issue, right? So if anyone's going out there, how much are you like, I mean, not at all, or
not at guys, all.
I mean, everyone that I've worked in my line of work, everyone that I've worked with, every German speaks very fluent English. So it's,
we have one coach in the league, who doesn't speak any English.
Okay.
Which is okay, 'cause he's actually the coach that's hardest to deal with for us.
That's super convenient.
It's very convenient. Yeah. So
I just send your partner over.
Yeah, exactly. So, language, I would say half our coaches, if not more, are North American. Our meetings are done in English. The emails we get are in English. My colleagues speak better English than me. So
that's fair.
It sounds like we're going to maybe like the announcement system next year for games.
Nice. Okay.
Like we have a few imports here, and I was with one of the Czech imports last night, and I was asking him, I was like, you know, next year if we go to announcements, like, you gonna announce in German or English? And he was like, English. I was like, okay. And I was like, well, because my plan this summer is just to dial down the announcements of, you know, penalties, and I'll be fine with the penalties, but when it comes to explaining why it's not a goal or why it is a goal,
just do it in English, do some German when you can.
And that's what makes it hard is, you know, everybody speaks English, so I don't find myself learning too much German.
No, that's fair. Yeah. That's fair.
Where's your favorite place to go in Germany so far? Like, if you're like, hey, like you've been all over the place now for a couple of years, what's your favorite arena? Like, what's your favorite place to go?
Oh, favorite arena. So if I had to go watch a game, I would say Mannheim. Mannheim's pretty fun. Again, the crowd's extremely hostile. It's always sold out. It's an NHL style arena. That would be one of the best places to watch a game. Munich's opening up a new arena next year, where Red Bull supposedly gave them unlimited budget for the arena. It's going to be nice.
Red Bull gives them an unlimited budget, knowing what the F1 team can do, I'm sure that arena is going to be unreal.
Yeah. So that's exciting to look forward to. But city wise, Nuremberg. Yeah, without question. It's very German.
Did you get to drive the ring?
No, I didn't.
No.
Oh,
so, boo.
Nope. And then
that's on my bucket list, is to get over there and rent like a nice BMW or Audi and drive the 13-mile Nürburgring on a weekend.
Okay, yeah. No, I never did that. I mean, but yeah, the Autobahn's a fun time. So
I like that.
Obviously, I'm driving quite a bit. I think today I hit 40,000 kilometers. So I guess I'm not really sure what that is in miles, but a lot of driving.
Yep. It's about 22,000.
Yeah.
Planes, trains, and automobiles. But so do you, and then obviously you're driving a lot now that you got the car, but you could easily, you know, train hop, right? Like go from city to city.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, if you have a couple of days off in Europe, it's extremely easy to get to another country and
spend
a couple of days there, especially on the train. So
nice.
Yeah, man. I mean, dude, it sounds like a really good deal. So it's kind of one of those, you know, work hard, get there. It sounds pretty awesome. So what's next? What's your plans moving forward? Where, you know, you're out in Europe. You're just like, yeah, I want to stay in Europe as long as possible and do that, you know, while you're young.
Yeah. I just found out this week that I'm going back to Men's Worlds in the Czech Republic in May. So
congratulations. I'll fly home
May 1st and fly back to Europe May 5th. And that tournament's about a month long.
Yeah.
So now I am coming back to Germany next season.
Awesome.
So they wanted me to do a couple year contract, but I kind of just want to stay 1 year at a time because right now my goal is Milan in 26. So that's
absolutely
it's kind of what I'm working for right now. And because I was on the list for Beijing as a standby, so got close. But didn't make it. So I for sure am focused on 26, and from there I'll kind of my fiance, mm-hmm. soon to be wife, will try and figure out from there what the plan is.
Yeah, for sure. And 26 will be an awesome tournament because the NHL is going back.
Yeah,
which
I wasn't too happy about.
It does hurt the chances of the non-NHL guys.
They send 50% of the dudes?
Yeah.
Right? Because in their association it's a player association says that if someone in the NHL is on the ice, there has to be
an NHL official on the ice.
Yep. Yeah. So, going into Beijing, I was on the long list and we were kind of told because the NHL was in limbo if they were going to go or not. So we were told, if the NHL goes, 8 guys of this 21 will go. If the NHL doesn't go, 16 will go. So it's 16 refs, 16 linesmen. But now for the next two, it will be 8 WHF referees.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So
that makes sense.
Be a lot harder, but at the same time, if I work hard enough, maybe I'll get there.
Yep.
Be in the top 8, you don't have to worry, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. That's awesome, man. That'll be fun.
What now for this season, right? You're about to start semis, correct?
So we're tomorrow. I have game 4 of the quarters. So
the quarters, okay.
We have 2 series that could be ended tomorrow, and then 2 series that look like they'll go the distance.
Okay, so are we going best of 5 or best of 7?
Best of 7.
Best of 7. Yeah. Okay.
So over here with it being a smaller country, they do home, away, home, away. So it's not
2. Oh, it's not 2-2-1-1-1.
Yep, correct.
It's alternate. Oh boy.
Yep.
Okay.
So,
well, with everybody being within a couple hours like that, I guess that makes sense, right?
Yeah, I think right now in this round, the longest is Wolfsburg to Munich, and driving it's 6.5 hours. So it's really not
okay.
bad.
No, that's not bad.
No.
Because they can jump on a train and it's probably a 2-hour train ride.
Yeah, and
3-hour train ride.
The richer teams, they fly. So
yeah.
Them,
wait. Yeah, but flying, you realize that's literally, they spend more time on the ground taxing. It's like take off, level off, and land. Exactly. You know, wow.
Yeah.
You would almost think that taking the train would be, they just hey, give us a couple of private train cars and.
Yeah, I think a couple of the teams do that, and then the lower budget teams, they're busing everywhere. So.
Oh, gotcha.
Just like the
is there a big difference with the teams as far as that stuff goes between you said higher budget and lower budget teams? So I know with one of the leagues I work with the SP, you can show up in one barn and you're like, okay, wow, this place is, it's like working an NHL game. And then the next place you go, it's like, oh wow, this is the same league.
I don't really know so much for, player wise, budget. It's obvious some of the bigger teams are able to get the bigger names.
Gotcha.
But when it comes to arenas and whatnot, and the facilities, it's all pretty similar around.
Awesome.
I think
that's all you can ask for.
Yeah. Germany this year was the highest attendance in Europe.
Oh, for all the leagues?
Yep, for all the leagues.
That's awesome.
So, yeah, I think, you know, the majority of our games are sold out, and we don't play on Saturdays.
Yeah, that's pretty neat. I was actually telling my girlfriend, I was like, we were at the dog park this morning, like, because I told her we had this, and I was like, yeah, Sean said they don't play on Saturdays at all. Like,
yeah, because Saturdays for soccer, and, you know,
okay,
the league's smart enough not to try and compete with it. So it's nice. So you hardly have back-to-back games here.
Oh, that's awesome. So is it like a Wednesday, Friday, Sunday league for the most part?
So we always have one game on Thursday, games always on Friday and Sunday, and then occasionally Tuesday. You know, but right now okay. In playoffs, it seems to be every other night that I'm working right okay. Now, at least in the quarters. So, but yeah, a couple weeks ago I did back-to-back. And I remember telling somebody, it was actually a former ECHL player. I was like, man, I'm not used to this. Like, Germany spoiled me. And he was like, yeah, you remember when we do five in a row? And I was like, yeah, and it didn't seem that bad. But now I'm doing two in a row and I'm miserable.
And you're feeling it. Yeah, I did a 4-4 earlier this year. And I was like, Gene, what are you doing to me, man? I can't be doing 4-4 anymore.
Yeah. So yeah, no, we get spoiled now over here. So that is nice.
I love it. I love it.
That's awesome. Yeah, that's awesome.
Well, Nat, you got anything else for Sean?
Man, I really don't. I mean, this has been pretty cool. We've talked about a lot. So, but I don't have a whole lot more unless you do.
All right. Sean, one piece of advice that you could give to either your younger self or just any referee out there that's, you know, grinding to get to the next level.
Yeah. My biggest advice, I wish I could go back and tell myself, is just focus on the level you're at. Like, I got caught up in it. When I first joined the ODP, all I cared about was working the USHL, working the USHL finals. You know, I didn't care about the NA3. I didn't care about the NA. So focus on that, like, whatever level you're at, work that finals and then move on and focus from there. And don't worry about pro hockey until you get to pro hockey. Like, for me, you know, when I was a little more immature in my career, it was just, I want to get to pro hockey, and I'm glad that, you know, it worked out the way it did, because the mistakes I made in junior hockey, if I would have made those in pro hockey, I wouldn't have had a job for long. So, and I guess another one is, yeah, don't be afraid to make those mistakes. Like, mm-hmm. I remember when I was in the ODP and I kind of pray that nothing weird would happen. I wouldn't make any mistakes. It would be an easy game. But, you know, now I think about it, is like, oh, like, at that level, you need those mistakes. Even at the youth level, you need those mistakes, because that's where you learn from it. And you can't make those mistakes once you get to pro hockey.
Absolutely.
Or you know, Division 1, you can't make those mistakes, or you mm-hmm. don't have a job. So don't be afraid to make mistakes, and just focus on the league you're at right now.
I love it, because it's funny. And, you know, you're on the other side of the world, and I don't think our paths ever crossed in person, but that's one of the things that I tell the guys here all the time, like, master the league you're at.
Yeah.
And then when it's time, the right people will see you and you'll move up to the next level. So that's just awesome advice.
Yeah. And it's obviously easier said than done. And cause, you know, I fell into that trap, and
mm-hmm. we all did.
Yeah. And I, you know, I think probably a lot of kids right now in the ODP that are in the North American League, they don't really care about the North American League. They want to be, you know, working for Johnny Grant in the USHL, when, you know, mm-hmm. that's not going to help their career. Like, be successful where you're at.
Absolutely. Well, on that note, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you, buddy. Best of luck with the rest of your season in the Dell. And we will catch up with you soon, hopefully on another future episode of the podcast.
Yeah. Awesome. Thanks, guys.
Yeah. Cheers.
Yeah. Cheers.
That was such a fun interview.
Dude. Sean's such a great guy, man. He has such a cool experience, right? And I'd love to be able to talk to more guys that have that experience, you know, getting out to go to Europe, go to the Dell. He's skating in front of, like, what he said, 19,000-20,000 people a night, just living the dream in another country. I mean, come on.
Yeah. Some of those barns are that big. It's a soccer atmosphere.
Right.
And being able to go over and do that, it's just awesome.
I wish I knew that that was an opportunity back when I was going to regional camp, right?
Well, like, it I don't know if it really was back then, but it's starting to be. And I really hope that, you know, it's a door that opens for more guys.
Oh, absolutely. Like, absolutely. I can't imagine, you know, I just, again, it's one of those things where if you told me that, hey, you could go work in, you know, in Europe for a few years, skate great hockey, you know, in big barns in a whole different environment. I just, you know, I'm glad that, I'm jealous. I'm 100% jealous of the opportunities that he's getting. He's earned. I won't say he's getting, he's earned.
Yeah, no, absolutely. He's earned them. Just like, you know, the other guys that have gone over there too. I know Bruggs and Renault and a couple other guys. Jamie got to go do it.
Yeah.
It just, what an experience that would be to, you know, work in front of a rowdy, ruckus soccer crowd that they have.
Right. You know, it's just, it's so cool. I hope it continues. I know it will, you know, and we're going to have him on again, obviously. Like, there's gotta be, more guys, more games. He's going to work, you know, continue working the playoffs.
Yep.
So fun stuff. And what, hopefully he makes the Olympics, man. Like, that's, I hope that,
we know there's, you know, there's, everyone's starting to get ready in that fold too, right? We're 2 years away with the Summer Olympics just coming up. And there's plenty of American and Canadian officials that, all right, it's now go time to set themselves up for the next Winter Olympics in 2026.
Yeah.
And I know it's going to be super competitive, especially with the NHL going, right? That knocks out some spots on the men's side, unfortunately.
Yeah.
And on the women's side, it's interesting because if I'm not mistaken, all the women that had international licenses from the last Olympics, or most of them, got to keep those licenses.
Okay.
Generally, it was a one and done kind of thing.
Right.
But if I remember, it was either Kendall or Chrissy that told us that, that I think some of them got to keep their licenses. And obviously on the women's side, it's just as, if not more competitive than the men's side.
Oh yeah.
So,
oh yeah.
You know, everybody out there on that short list for USA and Hockey Canada is definitely going to be getting it going, especially with, probably this round of world championships that are not too far off.
Yeah. The next one started June.
I think so. It's usually late May into June, 'cause it's usually during the playoffs, right?
Yeah.
As players get knocked out of the Stanley Cup playoffs, they go to the World Championships.
Right.
So, no, we got, you know, those World Championships and all the other international stuff coming up for everybody looking to make that roster.
Yeah.
And I know, you know, we got everyone else getting ready to, you know, go off to camps and do those things and just focus on trying to get better.
Yeah.
I know, you know, we all got all have things we got to work on.
Go back to the basics.
Something that I think Nat and I are going to start putting together. We're going to maybe break down some clips and post some videos over the summer, whether it be like some positioning stuff or rules stuff, whatever. We're going to give our opinions and our best effort on it anyway. But right. By no means are we experts, right?
Not at all. We're trying to learn with everybody.
Yep. So, but we're going to try to start doing some more material that helps. I'm going to try to find like a social media person for us to help us with like the, not just the Facebook group, but like Instagram and stuff like that to put out some more teaching
things. Oh, definitely.
I really want to get more into that. And then I want to start doing some video portions of the podcast, kind of like how Chicklets does it.
So. Oh, absolutely. I think that'd be good too. Plus, like, you know, I mean, we've got a guest list that's now more than a dozen. We, you know, we're schedules, you know, being a volunteer organization, right? Like, and everyone's going a million miles a minute, especially at this time of year.
Yeah.
We have so many guests that we want to bring on.
I got one or two that were like, hey, we'll come on after Nationals is over for the USA stuff.
Yep. We got some for Nationals. We got a couple other folks who, once pro hockey once pro hockey playoffs start to kind of subside, see where they end up. Like, mm-hmm. There's a couple of guests that I'm really excited about bringing on when we get that opportunity. Don't want to leak names or anything yet, but but I'm excited. So unfortunately, some of the folks that were like, yeah, let's have you on in the beginning of March, it was like, you're a better May guest. So
yeah, that's kind of what it's turned into, unfortunately.
Yeah,
but hey, we get it, you know, no big deal. People are busy and all that. So
oh, absolutely.
I think moving forward though, we'll have a good summer. We'll put out a few more episodes than we did last year, that's for sure.
Yeah.
So
cool.
Anything else?
Dude, I've got nothing else, man. It was great talking with Sean. It's great talking with you as always. Looking forward to the next time. We got a lot planned, so stay tuned.
Cool. Well, yeah, stay tuned. Thanks for listening to the Team Stripes podcast, and we'll catch you on the next one.